Ruthless, an EVE Online novella, written by Tony Gonzalez, adapted for audio by the EVE Reader podcast. Chapter 1, In the Depth of Space. Location, Fade Region, Solar System C8 TAC CHY, local name Drunali 7, City of Karaku Junction. Counting the blue pills and exile packs for the third time, Velamo reflected on how much he hated himself for what he was doing. He sealed each of the plastic bags and placed them inside his jacket pocket, pausing to take a long look at the wrist 11 pistol on the counter. He despised guns and had never handled one before getting involved in this ugly business. But it no longer mattered what his personal distastes were. Those needed to be set aside in order to survive. He tucked the weapon into his belt, making sure the heavy jacket concealed it. Opting for warmth instead of weapon accessibility, Velamo buttoned the coat right up to his neck. As dangerous as this line of work was, he had yet to find himself in a situation that required him to even draw the sidearm. Besides that, it was negative 10 degrees Celsius outside. The odds of trouble were slim on a bitter day like this. Walking outside the decrepit tenement building he had called home, Velamo passed by a homeless couple huddled over a small fire in the street. Their faces were expressionless, as if beyond despair and far beyond the point of feeling sorry for themselves. It was a reminder to Velamo that the sale of the drugs in his jacket pocket was imperative. The rent was due in just a few hours, and currently there wasn't enough money in his account to cover it. He knew that if he missed that payment, Ishikone watch agents would evict him immediately and electronically seal the door to his own apartment before giving him or his son a chance to gather their belongings. As always, the contact was anonymous, and the location was in one of the most dangerous sections of Karaku Junction. Velamo had done this enough times already to know that the client was a corporate type from the wealthy section, where all the city officials and Ishikone reps lived. They always seemed to pick the darkest parts of town to meet in, presumably to minimize chances of being discovered by their own peers. Velamo felt the bitter cold pierce through his layers of clothing as he walked past another group of shivering homeless people. No one had any business being outdoors on a day like this, unless you couldn't afford to be indoors, or, as Velamo thought, if you happened to have a nasty drug habit. One of the planet's 200 atmosphere scrubbers loomed beyond the city skyline, a solitary mountain of metal surrounded by a vast expanse of snow and ice. It took almost 100 years to terraform this icicle, Velamo thought, and look at all the good it's done. Velamo shook his head while crossing the street, avoiding a snowcat rumbling by in the opposite direction. The Ishikone Corporation had bet that the vast deposits of heavy metals beneath Drunali 7's thick shell of ice were the only source of such commodities in the Fade region. When the planet's atmosphere had finally become breathable and industrial-scale mining operations took hold on the surface, Karaku Junction became the premier economic hub for Ishikone operations in the region. Miners, entrepreneurs, bioengineers, and construction specialists flocked to Karaku by the thousands, shuttling back and forth to various planet-side project sites and orbital stations. Ishikone's massive investment soon began yielding huge returns, and the business opportunities for new arrivals seemed limitless. But the bubble had burst much sooner than anyone anticipated, and the consequences were disastrous. Astrogeologists employed by Ishikone's competitors discovered equally abundant sources of heavy metals in adjacent constellations. The reality uncovered by science was that the entire region was, in ancient times, the site of a dense nebula where supernova explosions and the heavy elements they fuse were commonplace. As more deposits were discovered, the price of the commodities plummeted, and the cost of maintaining operations on Karaku quickly outpaced revenues. The Ishikone Corporation responded by scaling everything back, stopping just short of abandoning the system completely. Now, the only ships that landed in Karaku were police vessels and the occasional supply ship. The Fade region's immense distance from Empire space accelerated the economic collapse of the Drunali system. With the prospectors and venture capitalists gone, all planet-side projects were placed on standby or canceled outright. Soon afterward, people could no longer afford to hire transports to get them off the planet, let alone out of the system. As was typical with Kaldari society, Ishikone's decisions for Drunali 7 were based purely on numbers, not conscience. The corporate philosophy was applied equally to both the pursuit of risk and the retreat from it. Thus, the Ishikone Corporation offered neither aid nor comfort to the contractors affected by the radical turn of events. The risk of failure while pursuing success was an accepted reality of Kaldari culture, and so Ishikone was neither obligated nor compelled to adhere with the welfare principle of Empire space. Velamo Gariushi, an expert geologist and engineer by background, was one of the hundreds of thousands of people who are now faced with a struggle for existence. His story was no more or less tragic than all the others living in Carrico Junction. When asked by an Ishikone senior officer for an estimate regarding an excavation project with an impossible deadline, Villamo had made the mistake of responding with an honest answer. An executive mandate so obtuse could only have come from somebody who knew very little about the realities of mining through several kilometers of ice. But the officer could not be bothered with such mundane academic concerns and quickly replaced Villamo with someone who would tell him exactly what he wanted to hear. Reputation is everything in Caldari society, and the major corporations that exist within its rigid cultural framework have zero tolerance for pessimism in the workplace. Villamo now had an official reputation as somebody who couldn't think large enough to suit corporate ambitions, and was effectively ostracized from Ishikone and every other corporation operating in the Drenali system. His great gamble for success had failed miserably and become his complete undoing, culminating with the tragic death of his wife in an industrial accident and the bitter estrangement of his daughter as a result. All that remained of the family that he had brought to Carrico Junction was his son Otro, who looked to his father to help him make sense of the cruel world around them ever since. Walking around the corner of a building, an icy breeze made Villamo wince. Otro still had a chance, he thought, tilting his head downward as he walked into the wind. His son was now 16 years old, intellectually gifted and ambitious. Otro aspired to join the Caldari Navy and had a fighting chance of being accepted into the School of Applied Science. The tuition was enormous, but Villamo always allayed Otro's concerns and encouraged him to pursue whatever he desired. Failing his son was not an option. Villamo was prepared to do whatever was necessary to provide Otro with everything he needed to succeed. That meant taking extra care to ensure that Otro avoided making the mistakes that he did, the greatest of which was placing his complete faith in the Caldari state. Someday I'll tell him, when he's old enough to understand, Villamo thought, as he turned left towards an enclosed courtyard. He couldn't bear the thought of disappointing his son the way he had disappointed his wife and daughter. The irony was that Villamo now depended on that which the Caldari state wanted him to hate, the Garistas cartel, for his salvation. It was the Garistas who took him in as a dealer and saw his academic credentials as an asset, using Villamo as a contact for wealthier clients because of his refined manners and intellect. The Garistas hated the Caldari state for all the same reasons Villamo now did, and he found that shared resentment comforting. But he could not, would not, tell his son that he planned to finance the boy's dream of becoming a starship captain through the sale of illegal drugs. Villamo's handler, a Garistas member known only as Gavriel, swore very sincerely to uphold that request. It still amazed him that these men, these criminals, had become the only people in his life that he could trust. Are we really villains, Villamo thought as he jumped up and down to stay warm, or just honorable men who respect each other's right to exist? The hover car passed by twice, as it always did, before stopping to let out a small passenger covered head to toe in winter clothing. A much larger figure emerged from the other door and stood by the car, keeping Villamo in a clear line of sight. A light snow started to fall, with the occasional gust kicking up powder that stung Villamo's face. The shorter figure walked deliberately forward and stopped about 5 meters in front of him, shifting weight from foot to foot.
Blue stars, red stars?
The client was female, and she was trying to remember the phrase that Gabrielle had instructed her to speak. Villamo could tell from her accent that she was corporate, that she was new at this, and she was already drugged out of her mind.
I think you mean blue stars burn the hottest and red stars grow the largest. Then I'm supposed to say the blue will die young, but the red have grown old.
He focused his eyes on her, but kept her companion in his peripheral vision.
Yeah, blue stars. They're my favorite.
The woman was now looking straight up and trying to catch snowflakes with her tongue. Villamo wanted to end this nonsense as quickly as possible.
Who's your friend over there?
That's Crowler, my bodyguard. He likes the blue stars too.
The woman took one step forward. The bodyguard did the same.
Do you know why you're here?
Villamo squinted through another icy gust of wind as the woman shifted dreamily back and forth with a vacant smile on her face.
You have all of the stars.
Yes, 30 blue pills and 6 exile packs, as ordered.
Raising one hand over his head to get the attention of the bodyguard, Villamo slowly reached with the other hand inside his jacket and gently pulled out the plastic bag. The bodyguard had his own coat unbuttoned now. The client's eyes opened wide when she saw the stars.
Yeah, gimme, gimme, gimme.
She clumsily lunged forward for them, catching her balance just in time as Villamo stepped backward.
You have to pay for these.
Villamo's heartbeat accelerated as another hover car drove past the courtyard, but then calmed down after it continued by without stopping.
Isk, I'll give you lots of isk for the stars.
The woman reached into her coat pocket. Velamo's eyes involuntarily widened. She caught his expression and pulled the wallet out quickly, pointing at him as if it were a gun. Velamo's face went pale and his heart stopped for a moment.
Bang, bang!
The woman started laughing. Velamo was not amused.
That's 25,000 isk. If you'll please wire the funds,
he said through clenched teeth. Following the same routine as before with the bodyguard, Velamo reached into his jacket for his wallet. The device was set for proximity and could already detect the client's wallet online.
Two.
The woman fumbled with the tiny keypad. Velamo was about to lose his patience, but regained his composure as the wallet display confirmed receipt of payment to the Garista's corporate account, followed by an automatic transfer of 2,500 ISK to his own personal account. He smiled. The rent would be paid on time, and the next sale would complete the first tuition installment for the school. Velamo reached out with the package, and she seized it.
Mine!
The woman clasped the package to her chest and tore open the plastic.
It certainly is now. Good day.
Velamo pocketed the wallet and walked past her towards the street, away from the courtyard.
Hey, mister!
Velamo was reluctant to acknowledge her, but decided to anyways. It was snowing harder now, and the wind was making it more difficult to see.
What kind of stars do you like?
An empty pack of Exile fell from her hand into the snow. Damn, he thought. That's an awful big hit for a girl her size. The bodyguard started walking briskly towards her.
What kind of stars do I like?
Yeah, what kind of stars?
Her head was tilted downward, but she was looking up at him with a strange smile on her face. One hand was in the same coat pocket she had drawn her wallet from. Velamo answered without thinking, just wanting to go home. The bodyguard suddenly broke into an all-out sprint.
Red.
Wrong answer!
Velamo thought she had pulled her wallet out again, but something didn't look quite right. The bodyguard shouted a warning just as Velamo saw a bright flash and heard a sharp crack. He never felt the 10mm slug slam into his chest and explode through his back. Instead, he thought it was strange how the girl suddenly dropped from his view, and how warm it had just become despite the snow that was now falling directly onto his face. In his final moment, he remembered how much he missed his wife and thought of her beautiful smile, and focused on that gentle image as the light outside faded to blackness.
What the fuck just happened?
Screamed Gavriel as he watched the snow and ice around Velamo Gariushi's corpse turn crimson.
Gavriel, what's your status?
Came the terse response through his earpiece. Unzooming the scope for a wider view, he saw the bodyguard quickly disarm the woman and begin hurrying her towards the idling hover car. He trained the crosshairs on the woman, trying very hard not to shake.
Nest, this is Gavriel. Flash morgue, repeat. Flash morgue. Permission to return fire.
The phrase, flash morgue, told the dispatcher that one of their own had just been fired upon and presumed dead. The bodyguard had lifted the woman up onto a shoulder and was now running towards the car, and there were maybe 15 meters of open courtyard to cross before reaching it. Gavriel moved the crosshairs to the vehicle's rear, where the fuel cells were.
The woman fired the shot?
The Ness was looking at the exact same view that Gavriel was, through the rifle scope.
Affirmative, Nest.
Gavriel wished so badly to hear the words that would allow him to squeeze the trigger just a little bit harder.
Permission denied, Gavriel. Stand down.
He couldn't believe what he just heard.
Say again?
The bodyguard practically threw the girl into the back of the car and slammed the door shut.
She works, Gavriel. Stand down.
He kept the crosshairs trained on the car until the view was obscured by a building.
God damn it, Nest! She just blew him away and you're gonna let her walk?
A voice now came through the earpiece, and it was one he knew well.
The order stands. Pack up your gear and report back to base. We have another assignment for you. Your other pushes will be covered by different handlers.
Gavriel was incredulous.
Bane, I don't understand.
I know about Velamo, son.
Some people were beginning to gather around the bloody corpse. In just a few more moments, Ishikone watch officers would arrive at the scene, and they would know that a handler was nearby. He quickly began to dismantle the rifle.
We're going to make this right, Gabriel. You have to trust me.
He took one last look at Velamo Gariushi's corpse before leaving the apartment. That dead man lying on the snow down there trusted me. Trust was always a risky venture in the Fade region. As difficult as a relationship was at times, Otro Gariushi viewed his father as the rock upon which his own comprehension of the world was built. Otro had already seen plenty of hardship for his young years, so much that he considered himself well-conditioned for the worst possible outcome of any situation. His father had taught him to be resilient in the face of adversity, which was the key to survival under the harshest of circumstances. As the vague memories of his mother and sister melted away over the years, the two gradually formed a strong bond that included a reliance on each other for predictability. Each knew the other's schedules and routines as well as his own. Otro had prep classes to attend, and his father had his erratic work schedule with Ishikon. Any kind of deviation from plans by either of them was noted well in advance, which Otro understood as necessary because of the dangers that lurked in the part of Kariku Junction they lived in. So when two men that Otro had never seen before appeared at the door of their apartment at the precise time when he expected his father to return home, the darkest cloud that he could have ever known descended upon him. Trying his best not to be distracted by the fear and the dread that was now on the verge of engulfing him, Otro silently made his way to where his father kept a gun for home defense. The door chime buzzed a second time.
Otro, I know you're there.
The speaker was the taller and older looking of the two. Keeping his eyes on the view screen in the kitchen, Otro fumbled with the ammunition clip of the weapon before finally slamming it into place.
We mean you no harm, Otro, but I'm afraid that we've got some bad news, and we don't have very much time to discuss it.
Otro didn't say a word, but he crouched behind the kitchen counter, keeping the gun pointed straight at the door. He watched the two men nod to each other, and then the shorter one pulled a small card from his coat and inserted it into the keypad lock. To Otro's brief amazement, the taller one plugged a small device into a socket implanted at the base of his skull.
Otro, you have to trust me.
The voice was that of the taller man. His deep, raspy voice resonated through the apartment as before, only now his lips were not moving. Otro realized that this man was a capsuleer, a starship captain.
What I have to tell you would be best told face to face.
The shorter man held a device to the door and then nodded again to the taller one.
Man to man. As your father would have wanted.
Tears began to flood down Otro's face. The realization of what the stranger was about to say was just too overwhelming, and he struggled to keep the gun steady.
It is as you fear, Otro. Your father was murdered today, and we came here to protect you from his killers.
Otro turned away from the entrance and sat with his back against the counter, sobbing heavily. He heard the door to the apartment slide open, but he did not care. The shorter man entered first, very cautiously, with his weapon drawn and pointed at the counter behind which Otro sat grieving. The pilot followed and spoke again, this time using his voice.
I know the pain well, and the anger that will soon follow it, but now, in this very instant, you have a decision to make. You can either come with us and we'll give you a new life and a chance to continue pursuing your dreams, or you can take your chances here, alone.
Otro looked through tears at the gun still in his hand. There was really only one thing he wanted to know.
How? How do I know it wasn't you?
I can show you proof, but now is not the time. You can either trust me, or I can leave. I know this is not fair to you, but fairness is not something that you or your father have been accustomed to. You now have exactly 30 seconds to make up your mind, after which you're on your own.
Otro turned the gun around and placed the barrel against his forehead. It seemed a sensible choice, given the hopelessness of his life. He placed his thumb on the front of the trigger and began to push ever so slightly.
When I was expelled from the Kaldari Navy, I thought about doing that.
The words of the pilot made Otro's thumb freeze where it was.
Had I made that choice, I would have denied myself the privilege of being able to lead a meaningful life by helping good men like your father, and now yourself as well.
Otro's actions were involuntary, and his survival instincts took control. With a sudden gasp, he released his thumb and dropped the gun onto his lap.
5 more seconds.
Otro tossed the gun away from him, along the tiled floor and beyond the counter's edge. As he watched it slide, a boot came down and stopped its momentum. Looking up, Otro saw the shorter of the two men lowering a weapon of his own. His expression betrayed a kind of resigned sorrow that Otro's young instinct sensed was genuine. Then the stranger reached out towards Otro with his hand.
Get up.
Otro reached out, and with a strong grip and a solid jolt, was hoisted to his feet. This concludes Chapter 1 of Ruthless and Episode 58 of the Eve Reader podcast. Cast details and production notes are available at www.evereader.org/ruthless. Thank you for listening. If you are interested in learning more about the rich history of the Eve universe, please visit the Eve Chronicle site at community.eveonline.com/backstory/chronicles. Copyright information regarding the chronicles in this podcast may be found at evereader.org/copyright.html.